Now, I'm a guy who went around the world for 10 years without a home. You put your credit card into the machine, pays the bill, and your food comes to you. Not a word is exchanged with anybody. There's something in this that is a little scary to me. This is really at the heart of what we're talking about. It's an attempt to salvage authentic human connection and get the most out of it.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com.
Enjoy the show.
Yeah, there's this book by a guy named Shane Balkowicz. And he takes these photos of silver on glass so that they'll live for like 1,000 years. And he was saying, we get into this, that all the photos that you're taking on your iPhone, you just keep snapping all the way. Guess what? 50 years from now, they're going to be gone. And the father of the internet, he warned me of this. He said the thing that scared him the most was called bit rot. And that's when the systems just move ahead and they don't take things that were left behind. And if you weren't careful with it, you can't go back and connect to it and you've lost it. And so this photographer is a very interesting character. Shane, he was just saying, Cal, I guarantee you, you tell all these people, all their photos, they're gone unless they print them out and protect them. And so what happens, like in this time of tremendous digital acceleration, and in this time of AI moving so fast that it was the case that, okay, I can make up any photo I want just by talking into a prompt. Now, within the next couple of months, it's already out there. You'll be able to make a video just talking into the prompts. That's how fast it's moving. And like, there ain't no sheriff in town. Like, what the? I understand that you can have rogue states that have their own rules and they're going to do what they want, but it really does seem like we should have more eyeballs on it and eyeballs outside of AI looking at it and saying, well, where's this going?
Yeah.
And what are we going to do with these people who create impersonations of loved ones? And then call up and scam people out of money. What's the crime? Like, what's the penalty? I don't know. I've never heard of any of this existing. Have you?
Not yet.
Okay. Not, well,
it's. I saw as an example. I should introduce my guest. We've just been chatting, Cal Fussman. You were episode 60, just replayed part one on the stream. So if you missed that, it's the past episode. And we're talking about AI and human connection today. And on what you just said, it blew my mind. I saw a video of a marketer showing how he could take his, you know, Caucasian American face and was able to face swap to make himself look like a Japanese American and take the script, have it transcribed into Japanese. And then suddenly the same gentleman with the same tonality and the same script has a Japanese face and he's speaking in Japanese for a Japanese audience. And, you know, I assume that's fantastic if it's just simple relaying journalistic information and facts, but if it's used for persuasion, if it's used for influence, And I've talked to Japanese Cal. What happens when I call Cal up and he's not Japanese?
Well, this is the whole point, that we are going to lose trust. That's what's going to happen. You're just going to look at, you're not going to be able to believe your own eyes. And we were referencing it early on in the conversation, when before we hit the record buttons, but a guy, an artist in Berlin, Boris Eldigson, submitted a piece of artwork into the Sony World Photography Awards as a photograph. And it was never snapped. It was never shot. He basically put prompts into artificial intelligence and created this amazing image of two women. And I'll send it to you so you can put it up on the video. And it wins. And then apparently the sponsor was a little embarrassed that it won. Yeah. And they really didn't want to get it out. And then he felt the need to let everybody know, hey, we're in a different world here. At the very least, it should be like a different division of competition, so that photos aren't competing against prompts. Mm. But as you're saying, this is happening in so many different variations that we're not going to know what to believe. We won't know if we can believe our eyes. And not only that, but it's a little while has passed, but in the New Hampshire primaries, people were getting phone calls with President Biden's voice telling them, it's only a primary. Don't go out and vote. You have to save it for the election. Completely in his voice. And it's plausible that some people might have believed it. Yeah. Now, there's a case where it's not somebody taking their own image and flipping it around and putting a different language to it with your same voice. This is somebody going in and hijacking somebody else's voice and putting it out to people. How are we going to be able to trust?
I wish I had an answer.
Well, the only thing I can tell you is it really is time to double down on authentic connection. And, you know, we're losing that. And since the pandemic, it's taken a pretty big hit. We now got people working remote, silos within silos. Teams can jump in on YouTube calls, but it's not the same as when you're together. You know, Ben, there's research that's been done that when firefighters eat together at their station, they are much better at what they do than those fire stations where the firefighters don't eat together. That's simple. And I think people can understand that. And, you know, I was in South Korea not long ago, and I walked into a breakfast place. And now I'm a guy who went around the world for 10 years without a home. And so for me, going into a restaurant was a form of connection. I could mangle the language. People would laugh, squint, look in at me like, who is this guy? Where is he from? Conversation would start. And before long, people are showing me around their city or their town. I'm making friends. And all I had to do was go into a restaurant and literally mispronounce the order. And it led to friendships.
Right.
So I'm in South Korea and I go into this breakfast place And there is this video screen with all of the dishes on the menu. It is the menu.
Yeah.
And the price is next to it. And you just tap it. And then the price comes up. You put your credit card into the machine and it pays the bill and your food comes to you. Not a word is exchanged with anybody. There's something in this that is a little scary to me because we just keep losing human connection in so many ways that we're not even conscious of it anymore. Like when I traveled, I would get on trains and buses and look for an empty seat next to somebody I thought was interesting, somebody I thought I could trust. And I would sit down, a conversation would get started. And if it was a good one, they quite often would invite me home and offer a meal or a roof.
You talked about this last time we spoke, you know, recipes for goulash, and then you're going home trying everybody's goulash and the drinks. So, yes, yeah.
And now, same train, same bus, the person next to you may have earbuds in.
Sure.
And the conversation's blocked. Or you have to do something startling to get the person's attention, and they may not trust you because they're in their cocoon. Mm. So I think this is something that we should all be concerned with, not knowing if we can trust what we're seeing with our own eyes, not knowing if we can trust what we're hearing with our own ears. Where is that going to take us? I mean, basically, it means the only people that you'll be able to trust are the people that you have authentic connections with, that you truly know. And if we're having less of those, it makes things even more difficult. So that's why I'm just trying to go out and connect the world in any way that I can, because people need to basically reboot their childhood curiosity and form connections so that they do have people that they can trust. And it's hard when you're blocking yourself off. And then I saw Apple put out like a new product, and now you got like a ski mask over your eyes. And I didn't do it. It's the first time where I saw an Apple product, and I thought, whoa, hold on here. Why are you like separating me from the world? Maybe somebody can convince me that they're going to show me a world inside that's going to blow my mind. And maybe they will. But where is this taking us all?
So, Cal, it's fair to say we've got a little bit of a problem on our hands. And I think what would make for a fascinating discussion is we'll touch on the classic human to human essentials of what connection and vulnerability is. And then I'd like to, by the end, get an optimistic perspective on like how we integrate this AI into our lives and still connect one-to-one. And to get started with a plug for a friend, by chance, do you know Nick Gray, the 2-hour cocktail party?
I don't, but thank you for introducing it to me, because who wouldn't like a 2-hour cocktail party?
So Nick seems to know everybody because I forget where he lives, but it's in New York. And he would put on these parties and he'd bring in everyone from coworkers to clients to the neighbor, to the person you just met at the coffee shop. Take the musician, take the athlete, and don't prejudge. you bring all these people in a room, you have icebreakers and a schedule, and he wrote an entire book on how he formulaically runs these parties and let the connections happen naturally. And the reason I bring this up is Nick's been on the podcast. Michael Bungay Stainier has been on the podcast.
Oh,
the
coaching I know habit. Mike. Yeah.
He knows Nick, and he on air said, "I'm holding you accountable to throw your party." And then off air, I made a accountability. I added stakes. If I don't throw a party by the end of February, I have to donate to the KKK. So I'm going to throw that party. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up, and this is coming on after the party, is the party's today.
Today's the party.
Tonight's the night.
And you didn't invite me.
And I didn't invite you. But I would invite you to give me one piece of advice.
Okay.
About 36 hours ago, I woke up and I had a big gout flare up. Do you know what gout is?
You know what? I kind of know what it is, but why don't you give me the definition?
I didn't know what it was until it started happening to me. So it's a form of arthritis, generally in the feet, right, where uric acid builds up and it causes inflammation, tenderness, redness, swelling. Right. And it kind of feels like someone took a hammer and smashed your big toe. So that flares up. I'm having trouble walking around the office. I'm in tremendous amount of pain. Right now, I'm highly medicated, but I have this party tonight. 25 great men and women are coming. It's going to be fun, but I can hardly walk. And if I don't throw the party, I'm donating money to the KKK. So my question is, because obviously human connection is important, what do you do when life gives you these challenges?
Meaning the gout.
The gout in cow's life. We all see challenges that tell us, just take the day off. Don't throw this party. You'll have to explain yourself, but you do it anyways. How do you make that decision?
Well, is the party in your home, in your office? Is it virtual? How is this party happening?
It's in my office space. It's a shared, actually right where we're recording this now, out in the main rooms.
Okay, but this is, listen to me talk. I'm saying, but this is like a real party. It's not.
It's a real party, yes, in person.
Human beings are, like, we have to now clarify, is this going to be human beings in the room? Does it mean human beings coming over the internet?
I spent about $75 on charcuterie and cookies, and I'm not the only one eating them, so they will be in the room.
Okay, that sounds good. What kind do you have? Any beverages? That's always a good start. What kind of beverages you got?
We have it's non-alcoholic. So we have some sodas, we have some kombuchas, we have some water bottles, some ice, spritzy bubbly beverages. Nothing too fancy.
You got any Olipop?
No, what's that?
Olipop is this soda that's made out of like plants and roots. And it's, man, you taste an Olipop root beer and it is just fantastic. It's got like 35 calories. It's pretty much all natural. And it's just a great way to go into the beverage space, and you're feeling you're drinking a root beer back in 1982, but it's a root beer made in 2024. So check it out. You can get it. They sell it at many, many supermarkets. It's not like some tiny beverage factory that only delivers in Hoboken, New Jersey. It's all over the place. It's big time. So next party, think of Olipop.
Coupon code Fussman for
10%. I was just thinking they're not paying me to do that. I just love their root beer. And they get all kinds of flavors. But anyway, so you got this party. you got the charcuterie, you got some cookies and these beverages. 25 people. How many of them do you know deeply?
Deeply?
Yeah.
Five or six.
So the other 19, are they people that you're friendly with? How many are somebody that you just randomly met and said, hey, I'm throwing a party, come on over?
I'm friendly with most of them. A couple people are bringing guests, but it's everything from client to my friends from the music scene to my friends that like athletics, to a gentleman that's actually job searching and just wants to get, they're all good growth-minded people that I knew would just enjoy each other's company.
This sounds great. Why? Like, you're going to let the gout hold you back? I mean, this is an evening that would make you forget about the gout. This is an evening of authentic human connection. And these 25 people are going to be in a space bumping into each other. Things are going to happen you can't predict that may change lives. They said 25. Is there, what's the mixture of sexes? You know, even there's a question. I don't even know how to ask that question right. Like, I used to say, like, what's the mixture of male and female? But now people may see themselves as they. Anybody coming to this party as a they?
I think one thing that's fantastic about this studio itself, it's called Muck Duck Studio. I'm renting a space here, is all are welcome.
Fantastic.
All are welcome. It says it right on the door. And tell me, why is a party like this important, not just for Ben, but for society as a whole?
Oh, this is crucial, because the best way I can put it, and I don't know if many younger people are going to be there, but they, in my estimation, certainly need it. And I'm thinking of that because I can remember I was speaking at a business school, university, and afterward, a woman came running up to me and said, Cal, I got to tell you about this app that I've created. And I said, what is it? And she said, well, you know how you go to conferences and you see people like in a hotel lobby waiting for the next event to start. They may be sitting at a table next to each other. Well, my app will tell them that they're sitting next to somebody at this conference, and they can then text each other.
Right.
And I said, well, why wouldn't they just say, how you doing? And she said, but they wouldn't. And so I don't know if the people are younger, but there are many, many younger people that it's hard for them to look somebody in the eyes. It's hard for them to be vulnerable. And I can understand that, because it was one thing to be vulnerable 30 years ago, 40 years ago. It wouldn't leave the room. Mm. But now somebody hears it. Somebody can turn on a phone and it's all over the world. So they're playing by different rules. And I understand it. And it would make it a little chilling before you revealed yourself. But what's the basic ages of the people who are coming?
Yeah, not as young as you are possibly describing, but I'm 32. I have my phone on me everywhere I go myself. I'd say between 25 to 45 on average.
Okay. Something great's going to happen tonight. It's absolutely, and I'm inviting you to come on my podcast to tell me what great things happen at this party. Because you're bringing in 25 people, some snacks. Do you have any planned activities, or is it, I'm just throwing molecules in the room, they're going to bounce off each other, and they're going to leave a little differently because they rubbed off on each other?
You know, that is the nuance that occurs on its own. First off, I feel like we're a walking advertisement for the two-hour cocktail party. And I honestly think Nick would make a great guest for your show. But a big part of the way he structures it is there's timed icebreakers. There's three over a two-hour course of the night, and you get together in a semicircle. The host leads, ask permission for the person, you know, pass it to your left or right. And you say, you know, this is my name, this is what I do, and then you answer the icebreaker. And then after everyone rapid fires the icebreaker, you can go off to the mingling. But the beauty of the icebreaker, I'm just assuming from reading a book, but the beauty of the icebreaker is, wow, I didn't know that Cal was also a Buffalo Bills fan, or, oh, I didn't know that about that person, and et cetera, et cetera.
So the icebreakers aren't even questions that make you vulnerable. They just say something about you that may connect to somebody in some random way that leads to something. Am I getting it right?
There's lots of examples, but as simple as what do you like for breakfast to what's a place in a hidden gem of this city that you want to share, or what's your best purchase of the past year? Let me ask you this, though, Cal, as someone who hasn't read the book and isn't biased to it, what makes a good icebreaker?
It's exactly that. I always thought an amazing icebreaker is asking somebody, where's the best ice cream place around here? Because generally, people smile when they hear the words ice cream.
I might add that one. What's your favorite ice cream flavor?
Yeah, but it's more than what's your favorite ice cream.
Where?
It's like where do you get like a great ice cream around here? So they can take the question, and if they do want to go to a supermarket because it has a certain ice cream that they love, that's cool. But maybe there's a certain place that they've gone over the years. Maybe if they're living in a town long enough, one of their parents took them to this place over and over again through childhood, and there are amazing memories attached to it. Generally, ice cream brings out good things in us, happiness. And so, you know, there may be people who, there are a few people who don't eat ice cream or don't like ice cream, but some of the, like the best encounters I've had with people have been over ice cream. And I've even like brought ice cream into interviews. I remember Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, was in New York, and her daughter was in high school. And like Mary wanted to spend time with her daughter, and I just like invited her to the interview. You know, maybe she'll learn something about you that she never knew before.
Sure.
And then I brought in some ice cream. So we all, you know, we're sitting down, eating a little ice cream. And it just makes the experience completely different. And here's the thing. Here's something you can do. Maybe a little too late. But you could get like 8 different kinds of ice cream.
Yeah.
And just see where people go and why. And I'm willing to bet that if your pal Nick does this, he will be able to, if the right questions are asked, like find out a lot about people just by the ice cream that they gravitated to. And you could probably do it with other kinds of food too. But, you know, ice cream just makes it fun and happy. And I don't want you to have to go out and buy 8 kinds of ice cream now. You've already done the charcuterie and what kind of cookies did you get?
It's Italian cookies, a whole array of mixed
Italian
cookies. Oh, man. My favorite, I don't know what they're called, but the rainbow ones with the chocolate on the outside. Those are my favorite.
Okay. That's beautiful. It sounds like it's going to be a great party. How long is it going to last for? 2 hours?
It's 2 hours.
Now, you just have to stop thinking about the gout for those 2 hours. What's at the root of this?
Sure. What's at the root of this is when something's important to you, you try to find a way to do it anyways, but sometimes it just feels like things are trying to hold you back.
Hey, that's the story of life. I mean, when are things not trying to hold you back?
Have you ever been held back?
I mean, I can't. Do you know, if you're not technologically on the cutting edge, it's impossible not to be held back. Because something on the computer or on your phone, or I don't even want to get into my internet provider, it's being banished from the house on this very day, and a new one is coming in. And like you got things to do. It's, in fact, I was talking to this guy, Kevin Cerase, who was the father of the virtual assistant. And he was saying, when the internet goes down now, it's like, okay, time to go home. Like, we're not getting anything done today.
Uh-huh. Can't even log in.
Talk about being held back.
Yeah.
Just being stopped from doing the simplest thing. Now, like, if you were a writer in the past and you wrote on a typewriter, you know, the ribbon could go out and you might not have a new one, but you can always pick up a pen and a piece of paper and write. And I suppose you could now, but it really, when the technology goes away on us or sabotages us, I find it an incredibly fierce wind in my face. And it happens nearly all the time. It's always something. So I'm sorry to hear about the gout. But my suggestion to you is to make this party so good that you forget all about it. That you're just looking around, watching people connecting, and smile at what you just did. Here you are, a guy. It feels like somebody is or was smashing a hammer against your toe. And in spite of all that, you got these people connected, and look, they're laughing. Their eyes are sparkling. They're learning from each other. You're doing a beautiful thing. So I say, try to use the connection in that room to forget about the gout. If you can do that, then you know you had a great party.
And you know what almost always happens after that party, Cal?
Clean up,
and then you get a phone call, a text message, an email. When's the next one? And the next one, I won't have gout.
What do you got to do to get through the gout?
I will get through it, not use my foot much.
You just got to rest it. It's just swollen. That when I think of gout, I think of something really inflamed and swollen and painful. But just by not using it, just by resting it, it will slowly go away.
Well, I mean, I've on more medication today than I took in the past 6 months, but I don't take medication, but that's part of it. Enough on gout. Let me ask you this. Have you ever thrown a party like this? Well, what was the party, if so?
A party like that? No, because I'm not the type of person that would plan that. It would just happen. Like I would be with some people and we would run into some people, and then the table at the restaurant would start to fill up and it would just keep enlarging. I've never planned a party with icebreakers, things like that. And it's probably because, look, when you're traveling around the world, and when I did it decades ago, things just happened. You didn't have to think of icebreakers to get people to feel comfortable. They just did naturally. And so this is really at the heart of what we're talking about. It's an attempt to salvage authentic human connection and get the most out of it. And it really requires effort now. I'm very curious about Nick Gray and how he came upon this and what got him to throw the first one and deliberate on it and figure out new ways to go deeper and get people to connect further. Bravo. How old is he? He's got to be a little younger, I would think.
I don't know his age. I'd imagine early 40s, late.
Oh, 30. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. I would think that 30s, that would be maybe something a younger person would do. Just, and I was thinking, I saw this film. I don't know if you've ever saw it, Vince Vaughn. It's called The Interns.
No.
So it's two sales guys who are, they're not old, but they're basically getting recycled out of the profession. They used to sell watches, but now everybody's got a cell phone. They can just look at their phone. What do you need an expensive watch for? And so they're kind of tossed out into the street, and they get this opportunity. It's obviously it's a comedy, it's kind of crazy, to be interns at Google.
Oh.
Back 20 years ago or maybe a little less, and all of the people on the team that they're put on that has to compete with other teams are young people who they have connection problems. And as salespeople, older salespeople, their whole thing is connection. If I make the connection, I'm a step closer to the sale. So I encourage you to watch this because they turn the experience into a party. And they win the competition and they get jobs at Google. And I think I was told this, I don't know for sure. One of the owners of Google was actually in the film at the end. He's walking by Vince and he said, welcome to Google. And it really was a symbol of, older people who are just used to going out into the world and having crazy stuff happen to them. being needed by young people to show them how. Mm. And look, years ago, when I was a kid, the kids went to the schoolyard to play baseball. We had our own captains. We choose our own sides. There were no parents there. Now, everything is basically presided over by parental council, and it doesn't allow the kids to just do it on their own. And so you can see why we need icebreakers now, because the kids who have grown up into adults have always been given these icebreakers of sorts. It was, this is how we do things. You know, this is where you go. Whereas kids, you were back, I say in the day, but you know, decades ago, you were just making your own rules.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's your party. You make the rules.
Well, nowadays you can track exactly where someone's going on their phone, and then you go, why the heck were you there?
Oh, no.
And as a kid or a young adult, try explaining why you were there to somebody. It's just where the world took me.
Yeah, I can't even, I really should try and meet a 12-year-old and just see what it's like to be 12 years old with a phone, with parents who are watching you. And, you know, look, my wife watched my kids on the phone. I didn't. And then when it got to the point where it was like annoying, I said, just put it on my phone. I won't look at it. And they, you know, nobody believed that. But I would say there's probably some radical generational shifts that have to be bridged in order to like keep these authentic connections going. But look, I think what you're doing is great, because it's very necessary. We just live in a disconnected time. People, if you work remote, you're a salesperson, you may be just sitting at home in front of a computer screen all day without any human interaction in the room.
The firefighters having lunch together, that brotherhood they create.
That's right.
The sisterhood that's created in those close interactions might not be happening anymore.
For a lot of people, no. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that, like, I give workshops for companies that have people scattered remote, and then they can come in, do a retreat, and really get to know each other. And it's amazing what happens when you see them begin to connect. They know each other in a different way. And then you talk to them afterward, and they will tell you how much the job is easier because they've made these connections, and it's just so much easier to send off a message and get something done because you got that authentic connection.
Let me ask you, are you optimistic with the AI and the technology and the disconnect? Are you optimistic?
I try to always be optimistic, because if you're not, you're just going to be sad about life. But it is concerning to think of a world where you don't know if you can trust what you see or what you hear. And that's a world that we're not stepping into, we're kind of sliding into. And then when you hear the other side, you know, well, look at all the advantages AI is going to give. Look at all the work that it's going to do for us. And I get it. It's going to be a huge time saver. It was an interesting part of a conversation I had where I was talking about how, and I'm sure this has happened to you, you're on your computer and you're typing a sentence and the computer says, no, you didn't mean to say that word. And it starts writing the word it wants.
Yeah.
And I think there's like a real danger in that. And like, if you look at the way ChatGPT writes, it's kind of like a high school essay. And I don't really feel like bursts of creativity unless maybe I spent like 10 hours prompting it to try to create the great American novel. And maybe there are some people out there that are doing it.
Go a little deeper on that, Cal, because if someone hasn't listened to the previous episode or doesn't know your work, I mean, you're a prolific writer. You've made an entire career out of the beauty of words. What are your thoughts on ChatGPT's writing? It sounds like a high school student essay.
I don't feel any artistic quality to it. Now, I guess if you start prompting it and say, okay, ChatGPT, I want you to write this the way Gabriel Garcia Marquez wrote in 100 Years of Solitude. I'm sure it could probably do it in Spanish or imitate the style. But again, it's just taking what it's seen from the past and repeating it, which is the same reason why when I'm typing words that it doesn't recognize, like these systems are saying, no, you got it wrong. We want you to do it the way it has been done before, which is in direct conflict from people who are trying to say things that have never been said before in a way they've never been said. And even in this conversation I had with the guy who helped create the first virtual assistant, he kind of admitted that, the writing maybe end up more in the center than out in like a new place. And it's got to, because it can only look back. It can't go forward. It can't think of anything that hasn't been put into it. It can only know the past. And it's only a language model. It's not like it's even smart. It just knows what word would probably go after this word based on all of the information that has been thrown into it. So I don't know where that takes creativity. And I said to Kevin Cerace, the father of the virtual assistant, what's this going to do to 15-year-olds? Like, to the creativity, if they know that they can just ask ChatGPT or another practitioner of AI to just give me this, and then they can look at it, they may change a sentence or two, and they're done. And he was saying, look, 15-year-olds were always lazy. They didn't, this isn't new. And he's got a point.
Yeah.
He's got a point.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. I did not like chemistry when I was 16 years old. If you could have told me that all you got to do is go on ChatGPT and put the questions that came in your lab book and get the answers that just fill them in, and you're an A student, how would I have not done that? Do you think I really would have struggled with it if I just had no interest in it? There's no way. And the thing is, I actually went back and took chemistry at a high school when I was 37 years old, just to like pass it on my own. Huh. And I got like the final score that the teacher gave me 100 because, you know, I was pretty close and it was like an accelerated class. Wow. And all I needed to do was simply pay attention. But I could not pay attention to high school chemistry, and the teacher who was teaching it was a really boring teacher. I couldn't. It was nothing that drew me to it. So if ChatGPT could get me out of that, there's no way I would have ever said, oh, I'm not going to do that. No siree. That's going to curtail my creativity. No, of course I would do. And then the father of virtual assistants said, well, why should any 11-year-old or 12-year-old struggle with long division? It's just a waste of time. It's ridiculous. Mm. I said, well, unless everything goes down and there are no batteries or calculators that work, then somebody's got to remember how to do it. But, you know, he's right.
Yeah.
He is right. Why would you take your time doing something that this machine can do in a finger snap? Why would you take an hour? Now, it's not like you're taking your mind to a different place, although maybe a mathematician would say, you know what? When I did that long division, it transported me to someplace. I don't think that's the case, but I don't know because I've never really been a mathematician. But for a writer, if you're struggling to write something great, you're going through, you're talking about like feeling the wind is at your face. Just being a writer is waking up to that every day. Just getting a sentence right, it can be reason to celebrate. Mm. And if ChatGPT becomes writing, then there's no headwind. It's just, here's what's been done. It becomes long division.
Yeah.
This problem's been done before. Here's your answer. But where is the challenge in that? Where is the growth in that? It's not there. And that's why if you're a writer, you need that struggle. You need to push to new places.
Can I make an observation? It's kind of an assumption, so tell me if I'm entirely wrong.
Go ahead.
I imagine Cal isn't just writing while he has his finger on the keyboard or a pen in his hand. You're writing in the shower. You're writing on walks. It's the experience of life that gives you the context, the understanding, the thoughts to make the writing. So it's not even just the writing itself. The writing is the end solution of the entire experience of your life. The questions, the listening, the parties. Is that true? Because again, if it's just a formula and you don't have to even put on your thinking cap to write, are you going to turn yourself off in those experiences? I don't know.
Well, you're exactly right. And it's not only me. You know the famous line, Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson, I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
Those lines were written by Aaron Sorkin, like great screenwriter. And he would be driving around just spouting, like behind the wheel. He'd be stopped at a red light. You want the truth. You can't handle the truth. And that's was his life.
Yeah.
And people would pull up next to him and think, this guy's out of his mind. And like the same way, like my kids, my wife, they look at me and they just, No, I'm like in a different place. My mind is thinking about it, how I'm going to get something from point A to point B. Like there's a journey going on, and what's the writing going to be like? And this is happening when I'm walking the streets. And I know, because I've talked to a lot of creative people, and this is what's happening to them in the showers. And it's not only writers, you know, Jack Welch, the CEO of General Electric, renowned for many, many years as one of the best CEOs ever. You know, he would wake up at 3 a.m. with ideas and have a pad and pen or pencil to scribble them down. He didn't want them to get away. Salman Rushdie, the great writer, would wake up in the morning and go like straight to the typewriter or the computer, because he didn't want any of all the magic that had been like flowing through his dreams to like escape if he just went off and got a cup of coffee and read the newspaper. He wanted it straight into either the keyboard or the typewriter, or I don't know, he might have picked up a pen and paper. But it's a very difficult way to live, because if you're around people who are living normal lives, very hard for them to understand that you're writing something in your head while you're in front of them. And it becomes a trick of staying present in the moment, and then also hearing like a great line in your head and thinking, oh, I don't want to forget that. So it's sort of like going back and forth. And if you're somebody who is just very straightforward and doesn't think like that way, and which that was my dad, it's really impossible to understand. Like I would be sweeping the floor, and he's thinking I'm sweeping the floor, when really in my head I'm writing something. And he would look at the way I'm sweeping and see that there's a more efficient way to get the sweeping done. And I'm not even really looking at the floor. I'm in my own head. So it's a very different way of living. And I don't think the algorithms and whatever's in ChatGPT, well, I know they don't have any understanding of it. They just know language. They know what word generally goes after the word before, because of all the evidence that has been compiled that shows that word should go there. And I'm always looking to put together new words, words that nobody's put together before, which is, it gets me into big trouble, because if I'm writing something that needs like SEO, search engine optimization, it's not looking for unique words. It's not looking for words that are going to lift your spirit. It's looking for words like inspired, because inspired says what it is, and it knows that when it sees that word inspired, it has been used many, many, many times to inspire people or to tell them something motivational or inspiring is going to go on. Now, it might actually be boring to me.
Yeah.
But the word inspired inside the computer means something different to the computer than it does to me when I'm reading something.
So, Cal, this is a positive thing. Let me explain a tiny bit of background. But way back in the day, people would hack SEO by taking words and putting them in white font so you couldn't even see it on the screen, and then put it on a web page so the keyword was on the screen but you couldn't even read it, and they would just keyword bomb the page and just fill with keywords even though the content was poor. And this was way back in the day. Nowadays, oftentimes, and no one knows the exact algorithm, but based on research, dwell time is the amount of time they spend looking at a post, looking at the page. Dwell time's never been more important. The amount of hits you get, the amount of shares, the amount of comments you get, these have never been more important. So if everybody's search engine optimizing based on keywords, but the algorithm doesn't care about keywords anymore, it actually leans back on who's engaging people, who is getting them reading and sharing. I'd actually say you making up words is brilliant, because then people start sharing that word and it all leads back to Cal. So at one point, you could keyword optimize and you had skills other people didn't have, it would work. Nowadays, since everybody has that skill, it's actually going back to what is getting shared the most, what is getting read the most, what leaves people staring at the page for 10 minutes straight. So I think that's a place of optimism. I think it's gonna be the wild, wild west online. But the best of the best will be gems, and they're gonna stand out because everybody else will just be vanilla and average.
Woo! Well, I'm glad you found some optimism for me. I want you to take it into your party, and I want you to have a great time. And I want you to report back to me and tell me what unanticipated things happened at your party that you are proud of, that made you forget the gout.
Will do. Cal, final words for the audience. Should they feel like the world's a dystopia? Give them optimism on your end. What? I'm an action-oriented person. They're action-oriented listeners. What actions can they take?
Well, they can do exactly what you're doing tonight. They can throw the party. They can... Like companies can have me in to connect everybody that works remotely, and they will learn questions that they can ask. They will elevate their listening. They'll learn to tell stories. And at the end, they'll come away connected in a form that they just weren't before. And so I am behaving optimistically. I'm out there. I'm letting people know that this can be done. And after it's done, people always appreciate it because they do want to feel their humanity. And just thinking about like competing with machines, competing with artificial intelligence, it gets a lot of people depressed. Young people wondering, what kind of work is there going to be for me? But the thing about it is, as far as I know, artificial intelligence cannot compete with being human. It can try and copy us. It can try and distort us, but it can't be us as far as I know. Now, there may be some scientists in locked rooms who say, yeah, well, if you saw what I got cooking here, you wouldn't say that, Cal. But I'm happy to be human. And I hope everybody at that party tonight is. Hope you have a great time. And I really do want to hear the results.
Will do, Cal.
All right, brother.
Next time you're invited,
I'll be there.
I'll fly in.
Holy cow. Listen, I am there. Beautiful.
You're the man, Cal. We'll talk soon.